interesting or already something I've noticed, familiar faces like Dr. Hal Burstein joining us here, Denise Beattie, age 44, West Bridgewater, joining us here. We'll get you all hooked up as well. But thanks for joining us today and being willing to share and tell your story, your experience here during the 22nd annual Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon here on WEEI. Again, a reminder, a lot of different ways that you can donate. And that would include something that we're encouraging a lot. You can be part of the monthly giving program. It's $25 a month, less than a dollar a day. It's a great way to get involved and donate. JimmyFund.org is a great way to do it. So, Denise, I know you were just getting on headset here. But I said it's great that you can come on. You can share your story. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So I am from West Bridgewater, Mass. I was originally diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer in 2017. Immediately went to go look for a second opinion, and that's where I found Dana-Farber. I work in the medical field. I've been a paramedic for 23 years, so I know the Boston hospitals and...
You know where to go.
Yes, exactly. I had surgery and medicine and did well. 5 years later, though, I found another lump. And after some testing, came back that I am now stage 4 breast cancer.
And so I know that you're on a drug called Enhertu.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is better to ask Dr. Burstein about or to ask you about, but how has that experience been going to this point?
Well, I'll say a bit about Enhertu, which is this exciting new class of drugs called antibody-drug conjugates. And these are targeted therapies where they take an antibody and they kind of chemically link the chemotherapy to it. And it allows the chemotherapy to be selectively delivered to the tumor, kind of like a smart bomb is how we describe it. And so we're seeing more and more of these in breast cancer in particular, but in other tumor types as well. They are steadily replacing a lot of older traditional chemotherapy because they're more potent at it. It's not so easy to get it. It's kind of like getting chemotherapy. One of the amazing things about Denise is that, you know, she's working full time. She's taking care of her family. She's the kind of person who runs into burning buildings and things and hauls people out during the COVID pandemic when they're sick. And, you know, just an amazing person who has just been so vital and living so well despite the cancer diagnoses.
Megos down. I'd like to ask, in the 5 years in between, obviously the treatment was very, very different. The stage was very different, but
yes.
There's been so many breakthroughs. It seems like just in the last couple of years that,
yes.
You know, now being treated must have been a relief to see.
Since my stage 4 diagnosis, I've been through a bunch of different lines of treatment, one of which was a clinical trial, which was pretty exciting. Unfortunately, it didn't do what we had hoped it to do, but taking part in these trials and, you know, trying new things is pretty exciting.
It's really an incredible testimony to the trust the patients have in us, that they're willing to try experimental medicines. And increasingly, we are using medicines earlier in the course of more advanced disease, using molecular diagnostics to help us direct particular therapies to particular tumor types. And there was one that we thought would be perfect for your tumor type. Unfortunately, we got it in the lock, but it didn't quite open the door for us the way we'd hoped to. That's the kind of work that's happening every day and what this kind of fundraising supports to such a great degree.
Well, and I'm sorry to jump in, Megal, but that's something I think that's worth underscoring a lot today. And I'm sure if you've been tuned in this year or if you've been tuned in the past, you're familiar with this. But this is what a lot of these funds go to, clinical trials and things of that nature, which I guess is a big impact throughout this day. Where else can some of the funds be utilized beyond that area?
So almost every faculty member at Dana-Farber has a role as a clinician and as a researcher or scholar. And so we use these kind of funds to support the clinical trials enterprise. As Denise knows, there's a lot of people. There's clinical research coordinators and lab specialists and nurses who are all specially focused on clinical trials. It also supports a lot of the enrichment opportunities at Dana-Farber. You've had people all day long talking about Lisa and her camp and other retreats and some of the other activities that make the place really feel like a very special and distinctive place. And I think those funds are incredible for providing that really tactile experience that makes the Farber feel so distinctive.
Denise, I had to ask because I heard that your family is involved in obstacle training at a gym. Can you
yes.
explain what that is?
And yes.
Maybe if this is something we should look into for some of our professional athletes in the area.
So I have two boys, 14 and almost 11. They both are active in this obstacle training at a gym in Weymouth called TA Fitness. It's basically, think American Ninja Warrior, that show. It's that kind of stuff. Their
awesome.
Head coach has been on the show more times than I can count.
Really?
And
how'd he do?
Really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Really good. And they are crazy. They are little monkeys. They are fearless. They do things that I'm just absolutely in awe of.
Are you thinking perhaps this is a pipeline that you can eventually get them onto the show when they age into it? I'm guessing there's an age minimum for that
yes,
kind of television
there
show?
Is. They're not old enough yet, but my oldest has talked about it.
Well, and they have a good connection. I mean, they have they yeah. certainly have a good in there,
yeah.
Which is true. So you have, Dr. Burstein was talking about this, but you have the energy to do all these things. You're out and you're about. You're out there with
yes.
you're out there with your kids.
Yes.
That, which is amazing.
It can be tough some days, but... the way my treatment runs now is I get an infusion every 3 weeks. So a few days after my infusion is kind of downtime for me. And then slowly I kind of build my stamina back up and, return to, I guess, my new normal just in time for my next treatment. But yeah.
How much longer is the treatment going for?
This is basically an indefinite treatment.
Okay.
It seems to be working so far. I had a number of symptoms that seem to have resolved within the first two treatments. I'm only four into this new Enhertu. And we will see where it goes. I have scans next month and hopefully positive results from the scans.
Amen. It's one of the hard things about having advanced cancer is living with that uncertainty about what the future brings. And I think it's why it's been so great over the past 5 or 10 years to see a lot of new treatments coming along. And you've actually had a couple which weren't around even 3 or 4 years ago and mm-hmm. are continuing to develop new therapeutics. So, one of the exciting things about being a physician in this space is to see that progress. And it's not just like exciting, but it's like immensely gratifying that we can offer these in real time to patients with the expectation that there will be more and newer and better drugs still coming along in real time.
Dr. Burstein, with this being one of the more common cancers, when do you recommend women first start screening for breast cancer?
It's a really great question. It's an important point that breast cancer can be caught early, and that often is the most important thing in a good long-term outcome. Our recommendations follow those of the American Cancer Society, which usually say starting around age 40 and getting screening every year up until around age 70. We are very lucky in Massachusetts that we have actually the highest rate of screening mammography in the country, and it's because of great outreach programs and educational programs and awareness like your program here is bringing to people, but it's very important for women to get screening mammograms starting around age 40.
I had a question about the trials, and forgive me, I don't know a lot about this, but when does a trial sort of become okayed for patients? Like, when does it stop being just a trial? It's always a trial, but when does it get sort of the green light?
Yeah, so there's a whole process to developing a clinical trial. Usually it begins with investigators working with either laboratory partners or pharmaceutical company partners. They obviously manufacture the drugs. And you talk about which kind of patients you want to treat and what the treatments would look like and what kind of supportive care goes into it. And then there is an elaborate protocol that's developed. It's reviewed by an institutional review board, including scientists and other physicians, to make sure it looks smart and safe. And then the study is activated. And the study can run from anywhere, usually from 6 to 24 months to enroll patients onto a study to see how the drug works, to see how active it is, to see how well people tolerate it. And then the data are carefully analyzed. In the old days, clinical trials used to mean that, we've sort of run out of standard options and now we're sort of trying things. But one of the things that's shifted in the past 10 years is there's a lot more interest in looking at clinical trials of drugs earlier in the course of the disease. We think we have better tools for figuring out who needs what kind of therapy, and the drugs certainly seem to be more potent earlier in the course of the illness. So if someone talks to you about a clinical study, it's not because they think that, we've run out of options. It's often because we have some newer things worth exploring.
Dr. Burstein, Denise, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story. It takes a lot to come on here, and it's good for our audience to hear, and very powerful for our audience to hear. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.